Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio. We hear FFRF co-president Dan Barker sing a couple of songs, including an Irving Berlin classic, and then we hear excerpts from a recent debate he participated in on the question of, does God exist?
And that'll
follow these latest headlines, United Nations Radio.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN Syria Commission of Inquiry warned on Thursday that it would be a failure of the highest order if the Security Council did not extend present cross-border aid to Syria. As the country faces its worst economic and humanitarian crisis since the start of the conflict 11 years ago, the independent Human Rights Council-mandated commission calls on the international community to safeguard existing life-saving cross-border assistance and increase aid funding. The current UN Security Council's authorization for the last remaining border crossing into northwest Syria expires on July 10th. Last week, council members expressed opposing views on the need to extend this authorization, which has guaranteed access to desperately needed humanitarian assistance for millions of Syrians since 2014. Commission Chair Paolo Pinheiro said it is a moral abomination that a Security Council resolution was in itself deemed necessary to facilitate cross-border aid in the face of consistent violations. Facing critical human rights challenges, Afghanistan finds itself at a dangerous crossroads, according to UN-appointed independent rights expert Richard Bennett. At the end of an 11-day visit to the country, the new special rapporteur on the situation of human rights in Afghanistan urged Taliban authorities to bring stability and freedom to all, especially women. During a news conference in Kabul, he welcomed the opportunity to meet with Taliban leaders and civil society, including women's rights defenders, journalists, and members of the judiciary. He said the invitation to access sensitive locations such as schools, hospitals, and prisons was a crucial commitment to ensure that transparent monitoring can be undertaken. Mr. Bennett expressed his concern over the humanitarian and economic crisis in the country and called on the international community to continue providing equitable humanitarian support. And finally, the UN Children's Fund expressed deep sadness on Thursday following the death of 11 newborn babies in a fire in the neonatal unit of a hospital in Tibawa, Senegal. UNICEF representative Sylvia Dunilov said no parent should experience the heartbreak of watching their child die. According to news reports, the fire was caused by a short circuit and spread rapidly. Ms. Dunilov said UNICEF would stand alongside the authorities and partners on the ground in support of families affected and to prevent further tragedies. Liz Scafidi, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine that. No heaven.
I'm Amit Pal, and this is the May 26th, 2022 episode of Free Thought Radio. Dan and Annie Laurie are actually on a short vacation to California, and they asked me to fill in as your host today. Grant Blaschka with the Audio for the Arts is our engineer in the Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in Free Thought Hall, which are the national offices of the Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin. Free Thought Radio is produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which works to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of non-theists, that's atheists, agnostics, secular humanists, and other non-religious individuals. We have about a dozen full-time attorneys, legal fellows, and interns filing lawsuits and amicus briefs, writing letters of complaints to government officials on behalf of our members who want to keep religion out of government. It's easy to join. To become a member of FFRF, visit ffrf.org and click on the join button. Or you can simply ask for information by clicking on the request info link, and we will send you a sample copy of our newspaper, Free Thought Today. Or you can call us at 1-800-335-4021. Again, 800-335-4021. As John Lennon said, and I'll try not to sing it, we hope today you will join us. So although Dan and Annie Laurie are not here today, in a few minutes we will hear from Dan, not live, but as part of a recording of a recent debate he did in Florida on the topic, Does God Exist? If you're wondering why some people do not believe in God, you'll want to hear what Dan has to say. This week, we are replaying last week's Ask an Atheist Facebook Live feature that we have every week, and that is because it's on a subject that's still on everybody's minds, even though it's been partly supplanted by the heartbreakingly awful shooting in Texas yesterday, and that's the imminent revocation of Roe v. Wade by the Supreme Court this summer. So FFRF co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor and FFRF legal director Rebecca Markert.
Today we are going to talk about five things to know about the leaked opinion overturning Roe v. Wade, written by Justice Samuel Alito. Rebecca has suffered through this draft opinion and graciously has written a blog about those five things that you should know.
You can watch that Ask an Atheist show on FFRF's YouTube channel that you can Google by looking for the Ask an Atheist playlist. We also have a TV show. It's called Free Thought Matters. And this week on Free Thought Matters, we have a very special on-site treat. Dan and Annie Laurie actually went all the way to Philadelphia from here in Madison, Wisconsin, to visit the studio of the renowned sculptor Zenos Froudakis. Let's listen to a little of that interview where they are talking about his most famous work of public art, the Freedom Sculpture in Philadelphia itself.
But somebody could ask you, from the moment you first got the idea or the concept of doing, how long does it take from that point on?
Well, the Freedom Sculpture, the piece that I'm best known for, I sat down, I thought, I had a lot of commissions, so I had several commissions, and they were to do sculpt businessmen, or they weren't of my choosing, although I tried to get as much as I could of myself in them. So I thought, I'm going to sit down and come up with a philosophical concept that I wanted to do a sculpture of. And I looked at different ideas, peace and love and freedom. And I thought freedom is everybody wants to be free of something, yeah. Of somebody, something, political system, an addiction, their parents.
Do they want to be free from religion?
Yeah, free from religion,
or
yes.
Slavery.
Free from religion, very good. And that was part of it for me too.
I have to mention that this is the last show of Free Thought Matters for the season. We are taking a summer hiatus and we'll be back in the fall. You can watch that episode of Free Thought Matters with Zenos Froudakis right now, including on-site visits to some of his public sculptures that are very free-thinking in concept. Go to FFRF's YouTube channel and select the Free Thought Matters playlist. And if you live in one of the dozen-plus cities where Free Thought Matters is broadcast on local TV, you can watch the show every Sunday. For stations and times, see ffrf.org/freethoughtmatters. And as I said, we're going on a summer break, but we'll be back with fresh shows in the fall. Time to turn to the news now. And there's been so much happening and no lack of issues for us to comment on. Of course, as I said, Roe v. Wade is very much in our minds. And another disastrous development was in Oklahoma recently, where the governor and the state house got together to pass a really draconian ban on abortion, even worse than in Texas next door. It really outraged us. We pointed out that most Americans and Oklahomans do not share such radical religious views, and we insisted that the governor resign, basically. We also, of course, condemned the State House, and Annie Laurie said very, very aptly that we are losing before our very eyes the right of women to control their own reproductive destinies to this ruthless religious crusade led by Christian extremists in our legislatures and courts. We are in grave danger of losing our secular republic altogether. It's very grim on that front. Another perverse trend that has started has been, and I kid you not, book bannings. So the Florida State House passed a measure that gives easily offended parents a way to ban books from the children's public school libraries. And in Idaho, a school district actually banned more than 20 books. We have to be clear here. FFRF, as an organization, strongly opposes book bans. You know, from the Catholic Church's prohibited index to the Comstock laws to the attacks on Darwin and Salman Rushdie, we have been always saying that these are absolutely wrong things. But, if people are looking to ban books, partly tongue-in-cheek, we have a suggestion, and that's a book that's very well known. That's in households all over the country and in libraries all over the country, but this isn't as well known, that a lot of it has passages that can be considered lewd or obscene. To check out the details, you can go to our website, and here I'm talking about no other book than the Bible. And we suggest that, you know, this is an apt book to ban if you're going about doing such things, which we, as I said, oppose and condemn. We actually have our educational association published a brochure, an X-rated book, Sex and Obscenity in the Bible, which focuses on nearly 150 Bible verses displaying a pornographic view of sex and women, lewdness, depravity, and sexual violence. And Dan, our co-president, has written an entire book on the evils of the Bible, God, the Most Unpleasant Character in All Fiction, which contains a lot of these details too. As I said, you know, we're being partly tongue-in-cheek, but still, it's something to consider for entities that are looking to ban books. Speaking of lewdness, unfortunately and sadly, another new report about sexual abuse in churchdom, and this time it's not the Catholic Church, but the Southern Baptists, and independent body that they set up has come out with a recent bombshell report. We have been calling repeatedly for federal investigations into church plural abuses, and we say the United States is decades behind other countries in holding churches accountable for complicity in child sex abuse, we comment. And we say it has been clear beyond any doubt that this is a systemic problem and not only with the Catholic Church. The last thing I wanted to sort of read in our news section is something, it's self-promotional because it's something I wrote myself. This is a column on the Russian Orthodox Church's backing of the invasion of Ukraine by Vladimir Putin. The Russian Church and its head, Patriarch Kirill, have been providing full-throated support for the illegal invasion of Ukraine, and I focused on that and the close bond between Putin and Kirill and how Kirill has been spreading conspiracy theories and providing a specious justification. Putin is also pretending to be religious and has been quoting from the Bible. This piece was published in newspapers all over the country, distributed through the Tribune News Service, and much to my pleasure, was published in Hawaii's Big Island newspaper. Please read the full piece on our website, and or you can Google it And it, as I said, it's in Hawaii's paper and in a number of other papers. After the break, we will hear a 100-year-old song by the free-thinking songwriter Irving Berlin. And then we will hear FFRF co-president Dan Barker during a recent debate in Florida tell us why we should not believe that God exists. I'm Amit Pal. Stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
Hi, I'm Don Ardell, a life member of FFRF and promoter of Real Wellness Lifestyles. I'm no longer willing to say, in God I trust, so help me God, God bless America, or pretend America is more under a God than any other nation. Join the resistance to Christian nationalism and politicians more attentive to what they think God wants than the needs of their constituents. Let's make separation of church and state a reality and turn back the drift to theocracy. Support FFRF. Our freedom really does depend on freethinkers.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
Hello, this is Amit Pal again, the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Communications Director, and I'm subbing for the regular hosts, co-hosts, Dan Barker and Annie-Laurie Gaylor, who are on a short vacation to California. As regular listeners to this show know, many songwriters and lyricists were not religious at all, and this includes one of the all-time greats, Irving Berlin, who was an agnostic and a humanist. He was raised in a Russian immigrant Jewish family, but he was not observant at all and never believed. Patriotism was Irving Berlin's true religion, writes a biographer of his. The man who wrote the legendary White Christmas, perhaps his most famous song, told his daughter that he actually hated Christmas. Irving Berlin's disdain for religious censorship came to a head exactly 100 years ago in his 1922 Music Box Review on Broadway. The church at the time was decrying the new jazz music, broadly defined by them, and denouncing dancing, preaching that sensual worldly entertainment would send you to hell. So Irving Berlin fought back. He wrote a satiric song, which was performed by a singer dressed in a devil costume while dispatching jazz musicians to the underworld. Here is our own Dan Barker singing the 1922 Irving Berlin song, Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades.
Oh, I got a message from below. Was from a man I used to know about a year or so ago. Before he departed, he is just as happy as can be. I'll tell you what he said to me. He said, if ever you get heavy hearted, pack up your sins and go to devil in Hades. You'll meet the finest of gentlemen and the finest of ladies. They'd rather be down below than up above. Hades is full of thousands of Joneses and Browns, O'Houlihans, Cohens and Bradys. You'll hear a heavenly tune that went to the devil because the jazz band, they started picking it, then put a trick in it, a jazzy kick in it. They've got a couple of old reformers in heaven, making them go to bed at 11. Pack up your sins and go to the devil, and you'll never have to go to bed at all. If you care to dwell where the weather is hot, H-E-L-L is a wonderful spot. If you need a rest and you're all out of sorts, Hades is the best of the winter resorts. Paradise doesn't compare. All the night people are there. They come there from everywhere just to revel with Mr. Devil. Nothing on his mind but a couple of horns. Satan is waiting with his jazz band. And his band came from Alabama with a melody hot. No one gives a damn if it's music or not. Satan's melody makes you want to dance forever, and you'll never have to go to bed at all. Pack up your sins and go to the devil in Hades. You'll meet the finest of gentlemen and the finest of ladies. They'd rather be down below than up above. Hades is full of thousands of Joneses and Browns, O'Houlihan, Cohen, and Brady's. You'll hear a heavenly tune that went to the devil because those jazz bands, they started picking it, they put a trick in it, a jazzy kick in it. They've got a couple of old reformers in heaven, making them go to bed at 11. Pack up your sins and go to the devil, and you'll never have to go to bed at all.
That was Dan Barker singing the 1922 Irving Berlin song, Pack Up Your Sins and Go to the Devil in Hades, on FFRF's Beware of Dogma CD, available at ffrf.org/shop. A couple of announcements and tidbits to share with you all. Firstly, as a reminder, and we're already publicizing it, late October, we have our annual convention in San Antonio, from October 28th to the 30th. Please join hundreds of other FFRers who will be there that weekend. There's an optional early bird reception Thursday afternoon. The theme of this year's national convention is Do Mess with Texas, in honor of the governor, Greg Abbott's explicit caution to us not to mess with Texas. And we've been asked by many members who, due to various Texas policies, have wondered why we are holding a convention in Texas at all. Our explanation is that we feel our Do Mess with Texas can raise awareness, and also we are contractually obligated, due to the negotiations required in 2020, just to postpone and not cancel that year's conference, which of course didn't happen because of the pandemic. And we have a lot of big names for you. Among them is the iconic Texas commentator and writer Jim Hightower, who I was privileged with to write, to edit his columns and to work with him while I was in my previous job at The Progressive. He has been dubbed America's most popular populist, and he will open the conference. Another real big name is John Irving. Yes, the author of The World According to Garp and The Cider House Rules, for which he won an Oscar. He will give the keynote Saturday night. There are abortion rights advocates, as would be appropriate, Amy Hackstrom Miller, Nebraska State Senator Megan Hunt, Daniel Mark from the ACLU, very deserving student activist honorees, Alice Gresham, who is an actress and a freethinker, musical treats, workshops, all of it. So please do come. You can register online at ffrf.org/convo-2022. We hope to see you all in October. Talking of Texas, of course, the thing that's on everybody's minds is the awful shooting in Texas yesterday, May 25th, and we are working on a press release to send out on that. And speaking of press release and news coverage, this has been a really gratifying phenomenon, especially for me, since I am the communications director of FFRF, that we started receiving a good amount of news coverage again, which was on a bit of a kind of a low trend due to the pandemic. For example, our Victoria settlements, two of them in West Virginia, have received a good amount of media play, and that's been really gratifying for me. We will finish out this segment with another Dan Barker song, a song that I've mentioned previously, Beware of Dogma. After the break, we will hear Dan again, not singing, but telling us why he does not believe in God. We will hear portions of his March 2022 Florida debate with Dr. Andrew Lloyd Johnson on the topic, Does God Exist? I'll be right back with more Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. It has a bite. Beware of dogma. It wants a bite. Beware of dogma. It will ignite a holy war by itself. Beware of dogma. It'll trap your mind. Religious dogma. It'll make you blind. Beware of dogma. It's not designed to let you think for yourself. If we let it out in the universe, there will be no doubt. Everything is worse. Dogma, don't let it loose, that unchained dogma. It'll reproduce, tie up your dogma. There's no excuse for ignorance anymore. It has a bite.
Beware of dogma.
It wants a fight.
Beware of dogma.
It will ignite a holy war by itself.
Beware of dogma.
It'll trap your mind.
Religious dogma.
It'll make you blind.
Beware of dogma.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers.
Margaret Sanger's motto was, no gods, no masters. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Amit Pal, Communications Director of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, and I'm filling in today for Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor because they're in California on a vacation. But we are going to hear from Dan again in this segment, telling us exactly why, after almost two decades of preaching Christianity, he is now an atheist. So this past March, Dan participated in a debate at the Free Flow Conference in Orlando, Florida. This was an event put on by a number of secular, atheist, and humanist groups in Florida. Dan debated Andrew Lloyd Johnson of Ratio Christi on the topic, Does God Exist? We don't have, obviously, time to hear the entire 96-minute debate today, but it was recorded by Johnson's Convincing Proof Ministry. And if you want, you can watch the entire video by visiting the YouTube channel Convincing Proof, and looking for the debates playlist on that channel. Today, we are going to hear on the show Dan's opening statement, and after the break, we will hear a part of his rebuttal to Dr. Johnson.
From my point of view, this debate's easy, because the atheist has nothing to prove. Atheism is simply the absence of theism. So I don't have to get up here and a whole bunch of talking points to prove that there is no God. Annie Laurie and I, the first time we visited Iceland, and we took a tour of the country, just gorgeous scenery, and there was a place where the road was going straight, and then it veered like this, kind of around, and made it like a semicircle, and then went straight again, like it was avoiding something. The driver told us it was, in fact, avoiding something. It was avoiding elves. There are people in Iceland who still believe in elves, and the government accommodated this belief by diverting the highway so that it wouldn't disturb where some people thought these elves actually lived in the history. And I thought, well, that's cute. This is local culture. This is, you know, I mean, it's a free country. People can believe what they want. If someone wants to believe in elves, fine. But what if one of the elf people, what would you call an elf believer? An elvist? What if one of them says, but it's true, Dan? You have to believe in the elves. And I would say, well, that's fine for you. You can believe that. But I have good reason for believing in these elves. That's okay. I'm fine. You can have your belief. That's fine with me. But you need to believe it, because the ancient elf thousands of years ago was killed, and then he came back to life. And if you don't believe in him, you're going to be punished. And then I'm thinking, well, that is maybe not so cute anymore, but that's your belief. Give me some reason why. Are there really elves there where the highway bends? Give me some reasons. And what if the elves were to turn to me and say, no, you have to prove that there are no elves. Is that the way to argue? Who has the burden of proof? Most atheists will say in general that not that God has been disproved, but that God is unproved, and that we are open to changing our mind. I would love to know if there's really elves. I would love to know if there's really a God. That would be an amazing thing to know. So bring it on. Atheism is simply the absence of theism, although there's a subset of what you might call hard atheists who say they believe or know there's no God. Most of us atheists and agnostics simply lack a belief, and I think it's based on generally six lacks or six absences. The first one is the absence of a coherent definition of a God. You heard earlier that God is somehow defined as a timeless, immaterial, spaceless being. What does that mean? We know what a being is. A being is an agency that occupies space and time. A being can be measured and can be weighed. We know what beings are. How can you take that word being and then apply it to something that's non-being? To be means to exist in space and time, and yet they're defining this creature as a spaceless, timeless space-time thing. That's not coherent. There are a lot of other reasons why the definitions of different gods, and there's many different definitions, fall flat, and we can't even debate their existence because we don't even know what we're talking about. It would be like arguing for the existence of a married bachelor. There are many mutually incompatible properties in these definitions of these gods that have been proposed to us. And some of them cancel each other out, especially the omni-God. The Christian God traditionally is defined as a being who is a personal being, who is omniscient, who is omnipotent and omnibenevolent. And yet those characteristics cannot exist logically. It's like a married bachelor. My favorite one is what I call Fang, the free will argument for the non-existence of God. If God is a person who has free will, regardless of what you think about humans. Most theists believe that God himself does have free will. He's a personal being who can make choices. But in order to have free will, you have to have options. You have to have a period of uncertainty where it's not strawberry or vanilla yet, or chocolate yet. I'm still going to decide. You have to have a period of uncertainty during which you can make your decision. But if God knows the future, including his own future, he has no period of uncertainty. There is no phase in there where he's able to exercise a decision because he knows what he is going to do in the future. So if you know the future, you cannot have free will. Of course, many of these definitions are not falsifiable. What is it that would actually prove your God hypothesis to be false? We rarely hear anyone give an example of a statement which, if true, would make that original hypothesis false. The second lack is I think it's the biggest one, the lack of evidence. the Elvis might say, well, yeah, I have evidence. There's stories about elves. There's songs about elves. There's books and there's sagas about elves. Have you ever eaten a box of Lucky Charms? There's the leprechaun on the front. There's pictures of elves. And I would say, well, okay, that's evidence, but is that good evidence? It's more evidence of culture and myth-making, more evidence of human wishful thinking to explain the world. But if there really was evidence, good evidence for a god, by now, someone should have won the Nobel Prize for pointing that out. Any scientist in the world would jump at that, wouldn't they? If there was solid evidence of the existence of a hitherto unknown force in the cosmos, then someone should have done that, and they haven't yet. So that's an absence. I'm not saying this disproves God, but it's a lack. It's an absence of God. And in fact, exhibit one in this plank is this debate right now. If God exists, why are we arguing for him? If God exists, why are we debating for his existence? Why are we falling back on words and abductive reasoning? If there's a God, it seems pretty puny, doesn't he? That he needs philosophers to come up with arguments for his existence. I mean, this doesn't disprove the arguments, but it does kind of show that this being is kind of hiding himself. And if he really is going to all the trouble to hide himself, what business do you have to try to expose him? You know what I mean? He's doing a good job of hiding himself, and you're trying to bring, come on, God, come on out. There's also a lack of good argument. And during my rebuttal, I'll talk about the three major planks that Adam brought up. The design argument is kind of like the guy who's so surprised. How did they get all those rivers to flow right along the state borders? How did they do that? Look at that. That must have been a massive feat of engineering and public expense. That's proof of something, right? Or like Julia Sweeney says in her movie, Letting Go of God, look at the human nose. Look at how perfectly built it is to support a pair of glasses. Look at that. How do you explain that unless there's some intelligent design here? Well, there needs to be a word for this. It's not really a fallacy, but it's like when your premise is backwards. When you think the state borders came first and the rivers came later. It's like Vic Stenger, he wrote the book, The Fallacy of Fine-Tuning. He's an astrophysicist. He just died recently. Vic Stenger said, the universe is not fine-tuned for us. We are fine-tuned for the universe. And yet, there's a fallacy that happens in the making of your premise that somehow this design is evidence when it's a backwards kind of inside-out thinking. I think we need a new word. We have deductive logic, which is pretty powerful for formulating hypotheses that are solid conclusions. We have inductive logic, which is pretty good. It's weaker for generating some premises. We have what Adam called abductive logic, which really is just a fancy word for your best guess. And that's okay when you're trying to solve a crime. You're looking for a prime suspect. Actually, prime suspects are people who do exist, right? But I think we need another kind of a word called maybe postductive logic. It's kind of like the post hoc fallacy. You know, the rooster crows every morning and the sun comes up. Wow, powerful rooster. Wow. Of course, we all see the illogic of that. Well, Adam is making the same mistakes when he's talking about fine-tuning. He's assuming a certain temporal causality here, even with the so-called formation of the Big Bang, admitting that space and time came into existence at the Big Bang, and he gets saying what something must have come prior. How can you describe prior to time? Time is a dimension. What is higher than height? What is broader than width? It's a dimension that we're talking about, and yet Adam seems to be talking about them as if they were things, as if time somehow could exist outside of time, which is not a coherent concept. There's other problems with some of these arguments, and most of them fall into what we would call God of the gaps. We can't explain something, the appearance of fine-tuning. We can't explain that so well, then God seems to be... Conveniently, the God that I was raised with seems to be the right answer for it to plug that gap. When we know through history that science has been plugging those gaps all along. What caused the thunder? They didn't know. It must have been some agency, some big being called Zeus or Thor or something up there. Well, now we do know something about electricity and about the weather. That gap is closed. It was open for a while. People were free to plug it with their God. There are some gaps that exist in science right now. We admit it. There are many unanswered questions. Why is the cosmological constant so razor-thin perfect in our universe right now? Why is it so close to zero? Could it have been some other number? And then, of course, another lack, the fourth lack, is the lack of agreement. Theists, people who believe in God, don't agree with each other about the nature of this God. They don't agree with each other about moral principles. You take any moral issue of the world right now that we're struggling with, gay marriage or abortion rights or the war or gun control, or you could name another dozen issues that are very important. You find good Bible-believing, church-going Christians on both sides of those issues, don't you? If there's a God, why isn't there just one religion? And then, of course, the final absence is the lack of a need for a God. Millions of good people, tens of millions of good people in this country and hundreds of millions of good people in the world live happy, meaningful, productive, moral, purposeful lives without believing in a God. We march in the same march with believers as well. In the real world, we know how to live a moral life through the intention of avoiding harm in the real world. There are no objective moral values. That's an oxymoron, and I'll talk about that later during my rebuttal. So based on that, it's not proof, but it is justifiable not to hold a belief in a God.
That was FFRF co-president Dan Barker's opening statement in his debate with Dr. Andrew Lloyd Johnson on the topic, Does God Exist? At the Free Flow Conference in Florida this past March. After the break, we will hear part of Dan's first rebuttal in that debate. I'm Amit Pal. I'll be back in a moment with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Steve Pinker. In my book, Enlightenment Now, I show that the world has become a better place as reason has been overcoming superstition and tribalism. But the values of the Enlightenment are under attack. That's why I'm a proud member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest association of free thinkers working to keep state and church separate. Please join me in supporting the Freedom From Religion Foundation to ensure that our government is driven not by religion, but by reason.
Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
In the previous segment, we heard FFRF co-president Dan Barker's opening statement in his debate with Dr. Andrew Lloyd Johnson last March at the Free Flow Conference in Orlando, Florida. Dr. Johnson's opening statement offered three arguments for the existence of God. Number one, the fine-tuning argument. Number two, the Kalam cosmological argument, and number three, the argument from objective moral facts. Here is a part of Dan Barker's first rebuttal.
I would like to ask for a better definition of a God, not just some spaceless, timeless. You know, in the Old Testament, God had a body. He had a face. He had hands. Moses was told not to look at his face. You can look at my backside. What was Moses actually looking at? Was there something physical there? Of course, modern Christians have turn God into an immaterial thing, whereas in the ancient times, of course, they believed God was an actual being. There's a book out called God and Anatomy by Francesca Stavrakopoulou, who points that out. So please give us a better definition of what this being is, not just some best guess. When I talked about fine-tuning, if there's a God, why would he need to tune anything? It looks like God has stumbled onto this scene where there's all this randomness, and he goes, oh, I'm going to have to tune this, I'm going to have to tune that, and pretty soon I'm going to make it so that human beings, which are the most special thing in the universe, besides me, human beings can exist. I'm tuning this dial and this dial. Victor Stenger, whom I talked about earlier, pointed out that, yes, it is true that if you did turn this one dial by the smallest amount, then life would not be permitted. But he showed that there's more than one dial. You could adjust this constant. But then if you adjust this one this way, like riding a bicycle, you could stay in balance. There are many other ways that life-permitting universes could exist. without being in this exact universe that we're in. If you take these huge numbers they give, the probability of one of these constants being off, it assumes that the numerator is just one. And so if you're going to make an argument from abductive reasoning for the existence of something that we don't know about, then why can't I use the same abductive reasoning to say, well, then this justifies the hypothesis of a multiverse? Let me tell you a story. You're convicted of a horrible crime. You're blindfolded. You're tied to a stake, and you're being told that you're going to be executed by 100 expert shooters. And you hear, ready, aim, fire, and you hear the crack of 100 rifles, but you're still there. Do you just go, oh, I guess I was lucky? That calls out for some kind of explanation, doesn't it? Did a wind come along and blow the bullet? Or did they actually all miss at the same time? Or you could think of a number of prime suspects. You could think of a number of possibilities. What's the best explanation? Well, maybe they all like me and they missed on purpose. That would be one explanation. That would be more like a theistic explanation. But what if you took off your blindfold and looked around and you learned that there were 101 prisoners being executed that day? None of them missed. You happen to be that one out of 101. Whoever it was would be the one standing there going, I'm here. Is it luck? Well, yeah. So if that number in the numerator is higher than the number in the denominator when you're calculating your probabilities, then you have a near certainty. In fact, then how do you know that the numerator is not orders of magnitude larger? It doesn't even have to be some weird kind of multiverse. It could just be different pockets within our own cosmos where the laws are slightly different, in which case any observer obviously is going to exist in a universe that permits observers to exist. Fine-tuning would look the same in a universe with a God as it looks without a God. So it doesn't get you anywhere. There are no objective moral values. That's an oxymoron. Because a value is a function of a brain. It's a concept. So to be objective is to exist independent of a brain. So how can you have a value that's a part of the brain exist outside of the brain as an objective thing? What you're doing is you're reifying a concept. The concept of moral values, you're turning that into a thing that somehow exists objectively. I will say, and I think most atheists in this room will say, that most of our moral values can be objectively verified. We have values that we choose, not because they exist from outside the universe, because of the way we bump into each other in this natural biological world where harm is caused often. And these values that we have in our mind exist in our mind. And to say that they are objective outside of the mind is to beg the question. You're assuming some realm, some transcendent entity somewhere that's above and beyond space-time, above and beyond nature. Some realm where these things exist. It's like a Platonic thing. You quoted Plato earlier. And yet, most of my friends, atheist friends, refuse to reify concepts into things and just treat a concept as what it is. It's part of a functioning mind. That would be like saying, what happens to the soul when the body dies? Well, couldn't we also ask, what happens to digestion when the stomach dies? Where does the digestion go? Does it live in another realm somewhere? Why is it that when I walk across the stage, my digestion follows my stomach? So the brain is also a bodily organ, and it's functioning, and it has things that we call values. And if I walk across the stage, isn't it weird that my soul is following my cranium? How does that? What's tethering it there? Obviously, it's wrong to think of a soul or a digestion or a functioning or a label for something that's working. It's wrong to think of that as a thing that needs to be explained in some way. We explain it only when the organism is functioning. Morality simply boils down to the intention to act with the minimal amount of harm in the real world. That's what we mean by morality. If you're going to judge a religion as good or bad, what are you using to judge it with? Real world stuff. Does it harm women? Does it encourage slavery? You're using actual physical, real things to measure, objectively measure whether these values you have are worth holding on to. If they're not, you discard these values and they no longer cease to exist in a real or imagined world. I think you can boil down morality in one word, and that's the word harm. Whatever harm is, you can probably make a list of 100 things that you would say are harmful. Whatever it is, it's natural, it's material. Even psychological harm has natural material because it's harming a living organism. And if you're acting with the intention of minimizing real harm in the real world, you are acting morally, because that's what we mean by morality. And I guess I would invite you to just define the word morality. Is it following God's rules, or is morality using your mind to see if there is some real-world objective basis for these conclusions that you have in your mind? So the moral principle doesn't get us anywhere. The fine-tuning argument, you know, it might give us a suspect, an imaginary suspect, but it doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't get to the elves under the ground. It gives you permission to consider that there might be some suspect out there who would answer your questions. And cosmological argument, I think, begs the question. Because when you use that phrase, everything that begins to exist, you're arbitrarily dividing reality into two groups: things that do begin to exist and things that don't begin to exist. Where did you get the idea that there would be such things that don't exist start to exist, so that we could even make the phrase things that do begin to exist? We have no concept or no knowledge of things that do not begin to exist. And if you think that's what God is, then you are importing your conclusion into your premise, which is called begging the question. So the Kalam argument, for many other reasons, compares apples and oranges and actually doesn't get us any closer to any real evidence for a real God.
That was Dan Barker debating Dr. Andrew Lloyd Johnson, who is with Ratio Christi and who has an organization called Convincing Proof. If you want to watch the entire 96-minute debate, including Dr. Johnson's side of the argument, visit his Convincing Proof YouTube channel and look for the debates playlist on that channel. So that's our show for today. Greetings to listeners in WOOM, WOOMLP 92.9 in Philadelphia, WZMLLP 92.9 in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, Wide FM and WMUULP in Madison, Wisconsin, our home city, WADR Community Radio in Janesville, Wisconsin, KEOS, K-E-O-S, in College Station, Texas, KZSM in San Marcos, Texas, KOPN in Columbia, Missouri, KEPW FM in Eugene, Oregon, Wool, Black Sheep Radio in Vermont and New Hampshire, WRFI in Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. Ask for more information about the Freedom From Religion Foundation by visiting ffrf.org. I will end today's show the way Annie Laurie always does, by saying, tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting. Thank you.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker. I hope someday